call the meeting to order.
I've got a lot of people out today.
Okay, can we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Gilliland.
Here.
Councilmember Koval.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Matusik. Mayor Sarzik.
Here.
Councilman Emter. Commissioner Curry.
Here.
Commissioner Renfer. Mayor Kelly's excused. Councilmember Ford.
Here.
Vice Mayor Long.
Here.
Councilmember Daniels. Councilmember Patterson.
Here.
Councilmember Dennis.
Here.
Just want to point out that I'm missing two on either side. I think it might be contagious.
Councilmember Sarah.
Here.
Good morning.
Here.
Mayor Jennings. Mayor Dixon.
Here.
Mayor Ardell.
Here.
Commissioner
Duke.
Here.
Linda Costello's excused. Clay Irvin.
Here.
Phyllis Blaze.
Here.
Bob Stoller.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Will we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, and just want to welcome everybody today, and public comment participation. Is there anyone in the public who would like to make a comment? Please stand up now and do so. Or forever hold your peace. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on. We now have the consent agenda. Do any of the board members wish to pull an item from the consent agenda? And if not, I'll accept a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second. Second.
Pat moved and second from Joyce. Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone
aye.
Opposed? Okay. Moving on to our action items. We begin with review and approval of the resolution amending the 2013 through 2018 Transportation Improvement Program. So Lois, would you like to take over?
Sure. I think everything is pretty straightforward here and very exciting for folks in this area who have been interested in the systems interchange, because this particular TIP amendment identifies funding for the US 92 I-4 I-95 systems interchange, which is obviously a tremendously costly project, but also a tremendously important project, not only for this area, but for the state. In addition to that, we had additional funding available for some bicycle and pedestrian projects, and so the balance of the projects that you see in here are able to move forward in their funding. I'm happy to answer any questions anybody may have.
Okay, any questions? All right, a comment?
Yeah, and just, I brought this up when we discussed it at the executive committee meeting, but this is the point where we're going to really need to think about when SunRail comes to the east side of Volusia County, where it's going to end up. We were kind of told there would not be funding available for this for a very long time, so they'd get the plan 60% complete. They'd sit on a shelf for 5 or 10 years. Money became available a lot sooner than we thought. Right now, they have SunRail in the I-4 corridor envelope, which is the easy place to put it when you're doing a 60% plan. They have it terminating in the middle of Belleville Road in front of Andros Isle, so anybody riding SunRail would have to cross Belleville Road to a parking lot that would theoretically be on the north side. When I talked with the folks at DOT, because Daytona has some concerns about this, and I have some concerns about it, it was really, no, that's not where we really planned for it to go, but, we had to put it someplace for this point that we're at in the project. Now's the time, as this moves forward, that we've really got to think hard about how we want to do this. I think there's a fair amount of consensus that folks think the airport's the right place for it to get to. It's just not easy. But we're going to need to have some good discussion about, where we go from here. And as they finalize these plans, what do we do to try and, if possible, move that path further to the north so we can get it closer to, ISB, closer to the airport, hopefully to the airport, to the intermodal station that will eventually be there. But really just as a, for this item, I'm supportive, but I just want to make sure everybody's aware that, this is sort of a domino. The next, not too far from now is Daytona, the county, you know, the affected cities and this board, we need to make some decisions about, you know, where we want, you know, SunRail to the path and the termination point.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make a comment. I don't mind it going south towards Port Orange and terminating the hell there.
You're out of order.
I don't know.
Get that hammer.
That's
right.
Or New Smyrna. I would support Port Orange.
Okay, Ron.
Along the same lines, on the other end of that SunRail, I am very concerned about keeping up to date on all the West Side cities with the managed lanes on I-4 and how they're going to affect that project. I think that is something that we need to be keeping fully abreast of, and we need to make sure that we know what's happening with the managed lanes, because that's going to affect SunRail on our end. And it's just, I'm glad to see it moving forward, but there's a lot of questions that hang out there and a lot of stories that hang out there that it's sooner we get the right information, the less speculation there is and less garbage talk.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I didn't want to get off track on a SunRail discussion. This item is really about the funding of the 1792 I-4 95 interchange, but just there is a linkage to that to SunRail. But like I said, as far as this particular item goes, I am supportive.
You know, caution us to plan ahead is what you're doing. Okay, Pat?
I'm just glad to see so much support for SunRail here.
Okay, very good. All right, can I have a motion?
Move approval.
Move for approval by
Second.
Pat. Second by Rob. All right, any further discussion? All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, so the motion passes. All right, that was our action item. Now we'll move on to presentations. So the first one is the discussion of the alternatives analysis funding options. Lois?
Well, certainly Mr. Gilliland's comments are a good segue right into this conversation, as well as another presentation that will be coming up a little later in the agenda. Again, we've been discussing the alternatives analysis for the last several months between SunRail and the Daytona Beach area. And the discussions really are centered around trying to identify the match requirement that we have of roughly $513,000. And we've discussed several options. One was cobbling together a series of funding options. It didn't quite get us there, so there would need to be more conversation about getting to the threshold. But the other that was very promising is a potential funding swap that the Department of Transportation had suggested. And again, I have to remind you, though, the AA is not really just a study. It's not an early planning study. This is a step into project development, and it's a significant step that leads then to the environmental analysis and design of whatever the preferred alternative is. And so in order to make sure everybody had the questions answered that they may have in their head about this particular effort, we held a workshop after the last board meeting. And at the workshop, we talked about different types of transit, including bus and rail options. We talked a little bit about project development and the changes that are there now compressing the timeline for getting a project up and operating. And then we also talked about various studies underway. And as I mentioned, we'll talk a little more about that later in the agenda. Now, we've spent, again, several months talking about this and considering options, but the reality is that before this board can take action, there are some other questions that need to be answered and decisions that need to be made. And more specifically, that has to do with the funding swap. By swapping local funds with state funds in order to free up local funds for this project, in this case, Volusia County Council is going to have to make a decision. They've already dedicated local funds to the projects that are under consideration, and so the County Council will have to take some sort of action to send the signal that, yes, indeed, they're willing to do that. Now, the county staff is looking into the projects to make sure that they're clear which projects have actual cash dollars and not just in-kind match and services. So again, this board will be standing by, if you will, until the county comes back with some sort of a decision on the funding swap. Then we'll know which direction to head. I think it's also important, and this came out at the workshop as well, is that we've got to consider buy-in. This is a project that requires support, strong support from this board. Whatever is the locally preferred alternative that comes out of this, there will be another 25% match, and then there will be operating costs. So there's a lot to consider beyond, again, just the study. As Chairman Gilliland mentioned, Commissioner Gilliland mentioned, there are other decisions, though, that need to be made as we put infrastructure in, and we need to be able to have some information about the alignment and the needs and the direction in order to make those infrastructure changes that may need to occur. So, I'll remind you that we had a feasibility study that considered rail and corridors and transit corridors throughout the county. There were some costs as well as ridership estimates, but they were very broad. And so we do have to move into another step in order to develop a project. The question that I think is still in the mind of some that have approached me is it an AA or is it some other type of feasibility study or systems level planning study that gets us closer to that? That being said, like I mentioned, we'll be waiting until we can actually take a specific action, and that will be pending county council action. And if there are any other questions at this point, I'm happy to entertain them.
Okay, Josh?
I'll bring it up tomorrow at the county council because it's something we discussed. That's not an issue. But just so it's clear, just because we do the alternatives analysis, we don't have to actually follow through with the recommendations. So it's not like we spend the money, we're locked into this thing like
correct.
We were
right.
with the first part of it. This is something that we do to see. And I can tell you, the alternatives analysis may not have Sunrail coming to Daytona Beach. It may not have it coming in through Deltona. I mean, I hope it goes through Deltona, and I hope there's a station there. I hope there's a station. Personally, I think the airport's probably the most logical place because of using federal funds as well from a funding standpoint. But we do have to start making decisions. A lot of the discussion about where does it come through, if we're going to get to the airport, if that ends up being the alternative, we have to start taking consideration of turning Sunrail down International Speedway Boulevard and coming over the Bevel Extension. I mean, those types of things we have to start figuring out because they will be very costly if we don't. Those discussions need to take place soon because there's a big difference in a project that's set up than a project we have to redo all the interchanges. We can't. It makes it cost prohibitive. So I hope, you know, I'll bring it to the council, see what they're, you know, what they want to do. I think I already know based on prior resolutions and things what it will be. I just hope everyone can support it when it comes back because this is, it's a big deal. And I want everyone to remember as well, when we're talking the alternatives analysis, part of it, one thing I definitely think we need to make sure that's part of that discussion is tourism rail, not just the commuter rail aspect of it. We have to start taking in consideration all aboard Florida. We have to start looking at it like that because if you're just looking at a commuter rail, you're missing out on this whole tourism rail model that obviously FDOT's used to, DOT's used to because they're dealing with all aboard Florida. They just got the RFP for the right-of-way down the B line, correct? That, I mean, that's, everything went through. They were able to get it. I think, are they still in negotiation or is that done?
I read about it all.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, that's already in the works. So if we don't have that discussion, we may end up being kept out of the loop. And that includes, when we say, oh, is this a Daytona thing? It's not a Daytona thing. This is a Volusia County thing, especially the East Coast cities. When you're talking about tourism and you're talking about New Smyrna, Deb, when you're talking about New Smyrna and you're talking about Beeline, you're talking about a station in Cocoa, there's a reason all the nice restaurants are in New Smyrna Beach. You know, they have the influx of Orlando going in on the weekends. Every friend I have from Orlando has a condo there. So you do a direct route with the station in Cocoa, and you take that tourism line route, things start getting interesting for all the East Coast cities, from Ormond by the Sea down to Oak Hill. So I hope everyone really takes that into consideration when it comes time to support it. Obviously, it's a little early. I'll bring it up tomorrow. The next count, hopefully, we have something to bring back to the TPO. And echo, absolutely echo, Rob Gilliland's comments.
All right. Just a reminder, too, if you'll put your cards up so we can keep track, and, you know, we do have a time limit on your questions. Gene, go ahead.
He answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Claudia?
Yes, thank you. The department just wanted to stress that we're in gaming cycle right now, and the department presented five different scenarios with five different projects with Volusia County. And it requires a work program amendment if we do a fund swap. It takes several months to complete that. So if we work from, and that timeline is March. So if we work backward, the department would really suggest a decision be made at the next board meeting of which project is selected.
Okay. Wow. I'll go to the county tomorrow.
All right, Lois, I have a question. You mentioned the feasibility study. Would that, we know that the analysis will cost $2 million. The feasibility study, how much would that cost, and would it accomplish the same, give us the same answers as we want from the analysis?
Well, it certainly wouldn't give us all of the same answers. Obviously, you get what you pay for. A feasibility study would be a higher level look at alignments and preferred alternatives. It may get us closer to a direction to head. And then that could be the next step in the process. That being said, in all fairness, the Department of Transportation has put the money in the work program. They did exactly what we asked them to do. And changing that at this point could create some uncertainty for the department that I'd prefer that they address if we change our course a bit or our pace.
And what would be the cost, though? Just comparing feasibility.
It would be somewhere between $200,000 and $300,000.
$200,000 to $300,000. Okay. All right, Bob?
I just want to make sure, as part of the feasibility study, that we pay a lot of attention to alternative and financing. We've been doing some visioning, and the vision, as we begin to look out 5 and 10 and 15 years, is getting scary in terms of sustainability, in terms of just our transportation costs are spiraling. I mean, we're about ready to replace all our roads in Port Orange, and we haven't been doing a good job at maintaining and replacement. My caution is, if we're going to start discussing rail, which is an option, we better start discussing, are we going to do less roads, or what are we going to do? Because we can't do it all. As I sit here, you all frighten me financially. Right now, we're the second highest taxed area in the state. I am not looking to go to number one. I would like to be in the back of the pack, or at least in the middle of the pack. And at the rate, you know, if we're going to do rail, we need to cut back on roads. If we're going to do roads, I don't know how we're going to do rail, too. Because in each of them, as I understand, and I do come from areas, I came from an area many years ago which got rail and almost went into bankruptcy because of rail. It is expensive. That's not to say it isn't worth it. That's to say you better plan ahead. And we better start thinking about, do we want more interchanges or do we want rail? Do we want more of this or less of that? Because it is a zero-sum game, and I'm not hearing that.
Okay, any more questions for Lois or discussion? Josh?
So Bob knows, as far as the county council, all of our funding for roads is coming from, it's not coming from general fund taxes. The only part that we're paying for general fund taxes right now is VOTRAN and SunRail coming up out of economic development, which is just our general fund, just in a different pot. Part of the discussion, and it doesn't need to be today, but part of the discussion may be predicated on some type of transportation funding coming in, either from the state, the dedicated funding, or if a proposal went out with a referendum on the penny sales tax. I mean, that these things could go together. It's putting the cart before the horse because we're not there yet. But there may be, I don't see us doing, when it comes down to it, I don't see us doing SunRail to Deltona and then further to Daytona without some sort of funding mechanism in place. I just don't see it as sustainable. But I do think that's the cart before the horse, because we may not even get there anymore. So I agree with that.
All right, Rick?
During the studies that we were doing for rail, anywhere along the line, was there a target population that they're assuming the state is going to get to necessitate the use of the rail,
or at least to get to the point to where rail becomes revenue neutral?
Lois? Work on it.
I'm not sure that rail is going to become revenue neutral, so I'm not exactly sure how that fits in. But the point, and again, all of the points here make me kind of excited to go into the long-range plan where we'll start to really ferret out some of those questions. That's where we put all the pieces together. You know, we're spending a lot of time talking about the alternatives analysis and everything associated with that one project, but we do have to look at it globally, and that's what we do during the long-range plan. That's when we compare the revenues to. As far as the state efforts in rail development, I think right now more of the momentum and the interest is on the regional scale, here in the Central Florida area, in the South Florida area, North Florida, and over on the West Coast in the Tampa area. That's where most of the efforts, I think, are really, and most of the dialogue is occurring. And I think, as Councilmember Wagner pointed out, while our responsibility is what's happening here in the Volusia TPO planning area or your respective jurisdictions, the fact of the matter is there are pieces that are being put in place that become a part of a statewide rail system and connect our state further out beyond what's currently occurring with Amtrak. And it is important to keep that in mind as we're thinking about these connections that we make and how this fits into that future envelope, which may be outside of our 20-year horizon, but I think it's still important to look at. Again, as Commissioner Gilliland mentioned, we're getting ready to build a $300 million systems interchange. We need to know how that interchange needs to be designed to handle any future, because it's going to be around a long time. We don't want it to limit some of those future plans.
Yeah, my point as far as population is concerned is all transportation really takes care of population needs, and we increase our transportation systems in order to take care of that future population. I'm just concerned that are we really going to enjoy the state that we're living in once we achieve the population that the transportation systems are going to take care of? You know, so I don't know. To me, what makes way more sense is let's get all the heavy stuff off the road and put it on rail and keep light stuff on the road, and it makes roads cheaper to build and easier to maintain. But apparently they didn't ask me that question 50 years ago. Anyway.
All right, any more comments? Okay, thank you, Lois, for that. We'll go on to the discussion of the TPO priority process requirements. I think we have.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and step up to the podium. You know, each year we go through a call for projects, and we develop priority lists. And we send those lists to the department, and as we did just a few months ago, and the department uses that to build the work program. And last year, this activity generated a lot of discussion here at the board, but that discussion in part occurred a little farther down the road into the process. And so we wanted to, before we even started the call for projects this year, talk about what it is that we do, how we do it, and get input from the board. We'll take that input back to the subcommittee that comes up with all the recommendations for moving forward each year, and we'll come back with decisions. So today I'm looking for feedback, I'm looking for your thoughts, but I'm not necessarily looking for any decisions to be made. We have seven project categories, and the first three categories that you see here, the strategic intermodal system, the roadways, and the bascule bridges, those are really, the projects are identified in the long-range plan, and during the long-range plan, we develop the priorities. And those lists, for the most part, have stayed static, with the exception of administrative updates as the projects have moved along. And if you were to look at those lists as they're updated with the last work program, you'd see that a lot of activity has occurred, and we've really, the department has been tremendously supportive in moving those projects along. The XU set aside is where really I want to spend some of my time, because that's what we have the most control over. Well, we have all the control over it. It's the TPO's money to program. And this particular TPO sets aside money. It sets aside 40% of the set aside for traffic ops, ITS, and safety. These are ways to improve the efficiency and safety of our road network. Traffic signals, turn lanes, shoulders, and the like. We set aside 30% for bicycle and pedestrian projects. Again, sidewalks, bike paths, activities that help people get around some other way aside from an automobile. And then 30% for transit, and that is identified for capital projects, capital expenditures for VOTRAN. Typically, that's going to change as we expand our planning area. So again, we do this every year, and those XU funds are competitive. Your staff fills out applications, and we have a subcommittee apply that criteria. But you all approve that criteria each year. Those applications were included in your agenda packet. When they initially apply, it's typically for a feasibility study. That's when we go in and we try to make sure the project can be constructed. And prior to us doing that, we had a lot of projects that somewhere along the line, after the money was programmed, ran into obstacles. It tied up a lot of funding, and that funding sat there until we found the obstacle, and then it had to get put back into the work program. By doing the feasibility studies in advance, we're working more closely with the project sponsors as well as the Department of Transportation to make sure we've identified the issues. Then the local sponsor has time to overcome those issues before the department programs the project. So there's a couple of items that I want to, again, try to get some feedback from you. And the first has to do with the evaluation criteria. And again, if you have specific thoughts today, then I'm happy to take them. If you want to take some time to look at it and think about it, that's fine. But we want to make sure that the evaluation criteria really represents the goals and the objectives, the values of this area. And there's been some discussion in the past about safety. You know, do we consider safety strongly enough in the ranking? If anybody has any comments, please signal to me. Otherwise, I'm going to move on to the next item. Okay, local match requirements. Several years ago, the local match requirement was 50%. And the reason that it was 50% is we don't get a lot of XU funds. And we want to make sure that we can leverage those funds as effectively as possible. In addition, local governments make decisions based on how much money they have to lay out for a project. And if the bottom line for the project is more expensive, but their local match is smaller, they're still interested in pursuing a project. And it may not really be a fantastic project. Now, the criteria should weed some of that out. But again, it changes that funding decision. Because of the economic climate, we reduced, when I say we, the board, reduced that match over the years. And now we're down to 10%, which is, in essence, the minimum match that can be required. It is 20% for transportation alternatives, and that was, again, set. That's a part of the federal requirement. We could use matching, in-kind soft matching, but this board has agreed to leave it as a 20% hard match. Now, that can be provided with in-kind services, which is often the case. You all do the engineering and the construction inspection, and that becomes your 10% match. But again, this was discussed, and Mayor Kelly's not here today. He certainly led the charge last year and has echoed it a number of times, so I'm just going to share that today, since he's not here to share it himself, that he has stated pretty clearly that he thinks that local governments should have more of a stake in this. So I'd look for some feedback from you all on local match.
And I don't want to put words in Mayor Kelly's mouth, but I think that where he was headed was that you left the minimum at where they currently are, but what happens was if you were willing to put up more of a local match, that you it would get you more points in the evaluation, so you might rank higher at the end. So, it, like I said, it wasn't to I don't want to speak for him, but I've heard him say this about 10 times now, so I think I figured it out. But I'm pretty sure that was where he was headed, so it wasn't to change the minimum. It was to grant a higher priority to ones that would be pulling less XU funds out based on the total percentage of the project.
And you'll see on the bike ped application that happens. You know, you get additional points if you're willing to put up more money. Now, I would share with you at the TCC and CAC, there was concern that if that local match gets raised, then smaller local governments will have a harder time. They don't typically have the option because they don't have the staff resources to provide in-kind services. For a lot of the smaller local governments, it is a cash match, and it becomes very challenging.
Well, that's what I was going to say, piggybacks on what you just said. Both this and the one down there on the extra points tends to skew the approval rate to the areas that have larger funding sources. You take Edgewater with a general fund of like $12 million as opposed to, I don't know, Ormond Beach or Daytona or whomever. You know, they can put a few more hundred thousand into it without feeling it. Now, that's, you know, hypothetically. But the smaller we are, the more difficult that becomes. You know, if you look at Oak Hill and Pearson and, you know, some of the smaller areas, you're pretty much wiping them out of the contention there.
Okay, Rick?
My feeling was there was a reason why they set the percentages higher to begin with. And the reason that they were lowered is because of the economic times. For lack of being overly simplistic, why don't we go back and look at the reason why they made them 50% to begin with, see if they still apply, and then go forward. Because I echo the small town philosophy, but I also understand that I think the initial incentive behind it was you want a stake in a game, you want skin in a game, okay. You're coming after the money you need to have. Is 50% realistic? I don't know. That's tough in today's dollars. But 10% is much easier for some communities than it is for others. So it needs to be looked at.
Okay. Project funding caps. As you saw from the previous slide, two slides ago, we get roughly 1.4 or 1.8 million a year in those particular programs for ITS safety or bicycle and pedestrian. There's a limit to how much money. These are not huge programs. They're not designed really to fund large projects. If a project is submitted that well exceeds that, it has to be broken up. It has to be broken up because there's simply not enough money in any annual allocation to fund it. So we have to break up phases. We have to break the project into segments if that's possible, because we don't have the option for rolling over money and saving it up like it had been at one point. And so, again, currently there are some caps, but those were implemented last year, and we didn't necessarily do them across the board. So the annual, they're basically set that any project can use up roughly twice the annual allocation. So when you submit a project, if it was ranked number one, and in order to fund it, it took up 2 years of funding, and then somebody else would get a term. So it wouldn't take up 10 or 20 years of funding. And then, obviously, no more than the annual allocation in any given year. So, again, you'd have to segment or break up that project. And so the question here is, are caps appropriate? There are certainly some folks that are not excited about the idea of caps because it limits the opportunity. Now, the applications do say the board always has the option to waive a cap. If there's a high-priority project that the area wants to fund, maybe it has multiple project sponsors, there's always the option for the board to say, that doesn't apply here. This is an important project, and we want to fund it. But again, what we're trying to do is identify ways to right-size projects for the money that's available. So are there any thoughts on the funding cap? Again, I think what we heard from the TCC and CAC is some consistency, and of course their chairmen are here to represent as well, but consistency is probably a good idea. Any ideas on funding caps? No? Then we'll just bring these each back to the committees for discussion. Oh, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Nancy, I just wanted to ask a question. The evaluation criteria seems to be the most important. If you're going to send it back for discussion, I think if we tighten that down, there's less rub, if you will, on funding caps and limiting the projects. I mean, if we, as a board, as we, you know, we're going to increase the size of this, we've got Palm Coast coming in, Bunnell, Flagler County. I think the evaluation criteria probably should be studied more so that projects that really are critical should get the funding and should, do what we have to do when we start talking about making special exceptions and that. It shouldn't be so much of a competitive thing between the cities. It should be what's needed best for our service area, for the area we cover. So I would encourage, rather than worry about how much money's going this and that, find the most appropriate project, the best project, and then let's put all of our efforts together to get that project done and move on to the next. I don't really like the idea of limiting funding or putting caps on that. Now, I think the criteria, what we do, is more important than anything.
Okay, Bob?
Yeah, I don't want to appear like a contrarian, but one of the problems when you take the big approach is a lot of communities get overlooked, and it tends to go with the political power or the centers. So I think a more balanced approach, I'm not opposed to having a way to override caps, but I do think there's something inherently democratic about spreading the wealth around, especially when it comes to something like XU funding and the like. For example, my area has not received a lot of trail money. It's difficult for us because we're now not interconnected to make the store thing, but we certainly should start. And I think allowing the type of a little more openness to the system and a little less putting all the eggs in one basket, you permit those that are behind the curve to get started and get involved.
Well, if I could, on those two points, I'll remind you all, if you're new to the group or to this process and you're still getting accustomed to it, or you haven't maybe gotten out of the area, this application process, the screening criteria that we use, is really pretty unique, certainly in the area and pretty much around the state. We've been using it here at this TPO, and credit to all of the predecessors that we've had in staffing that have come up with this and the board as well. It's very effective. It removes a lot of the subjectivity into identifying project ranking. It does it very effectively. All of the member partners know exactly what it is that they need to do in order to be successful. And we really just keep coming back to the table and tweaking it a little bit each year. But it really is quite a model, and I can tell you in other areas, they don't have anything this comprehensive, and they sit down and they look and they kind of try to rank. And certainly when you're doing that, you have to be applying some sort of goals and objectives and criteria. It's just not as upfront, which puts project sponsors at a huge disadvantage to try to guess what the board may want and to try and have their member come in and really be the lobby for that project. So again, we have a very, very good process in place. We just always want to come back and make sure that we're hitting the target, because obviously we as staff and our committee members are trying to bring to you what it is that you want and need. And that being said, I'll come back down to project eligibility. As budgets have gotten tighter and tighter, we continue to get projects that stretch the definition of our programs. And we have most recently been asked the question, should we be funding master plans? And this maybe comes back to comments that were just made. How do we help some of our local government partners prepare and have a good plan and approach so that they do bring forward good and important projects that score well? And so the question is this board interested in helping fund master plans? A number of you already have master plans that didn't get funded through us. Not that I'm skewing the conversation, but it's certainly a legitimate concern. Bob?
Yeah, I personally would not be interested in funding master plans. There's too much of a high probability of them sitting on the table for too long. I mean, my city has absolute bookcases full of master plans that were never actualized. I really think in the tight financial market we're now living in, I really want to spend money on moving dirt. And, at the minimum, engineering design to move forward. I really think we need to take our scarce resources less in the planning phase and more in the production phase.
Okay, Rob?
The one sort of almost exception to that I would throw in there is when we have things like the US 1 corridor study, which is kind of master planning, but it's a multi-jurisdictional thing, and it's really trying to get, Mormon, Daytona, all the cities, in this case on the east side of the county, to kind of work together. But I don't think that there may be a better way to do it, but these multi-jurisdictional things, I think it maybe makes some sense for there to be some participation, but I don't think it should be 100% funding.
All right.
Okay. Well, those are really the items that I wanted feedback on. If over time you have conversations with your staff or you have any other thoughts on this, please, by all means, let me know. The whole point was to try and make sure that we had some direction for the subcommittee as they go off and try to update the process for this upcoming year. And we'll bring your thoughts and comments back to them. And over the next few meetings, we'll be bringing, again, project applications for your approval, as well as the resolutions that establish local match and the process itself.
Okay, Rick, did you have a
yes,
final question?
Yes, that's fine. Just on planning, I know it can be, I know there's not enough money out there to go around. I understand that. But by name, we're a transportation planning organization. I think first and foremost, our obligation is to be visionaries and to look ahead and to try to plan. I understand it's frustrating that you spend money on planning and then there's nothing left to actually do the project. But if you don't plan, well, how do you even know whether you built the right project or not? So, and on cost overruns, I think you need to stay with the cities. Somebody that's out in their field worked with it. I believe there's less headache when you get to the specific issue. That, in other words, if it's owned by a municipality, they should have skin in the game, and therefore they should have some say in what they actually want to do. But if they don't pay for it, they can get steamrolled. It's easy to happen.
The challenge, and I'm sorry I didn't focus on that item. We have a policy right now that says cost overruns will be paid for by the local government sponsor, and we've had a number of occasions where something has cropped up that's beyond the control of the sponsor and it hadn't been identified in the feasibility study, and we've all agreed that we need to let the sponsor off the hook because it's a project we still want to see move forward. And the DOT has, from time to time, identified funding, and we're always happy when the DOT wants to put money on a project. the challenge with this is trying to make sure that we're managing budgets responsibly and we're not making changes midstream that really explode project costs and turn them into something that this board hadn't approved or hadn't contemplated. And sometimes that happens. In addition, there was a period of time where DOT was setting aside a lot of money from that pot in contingency because this was happening so frequently. And by putting that policy in place, it allowed the DOT to free up that cash and actually get projects built. So again, you know, we made that decision to try and make sure that we were spending the money available to us and not always trying to play it safe by setting aside money. So we just want to come back and, again, make sure that, that it's still serving the purpose and that we're managing things well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, moving to C, the intermodal transit station study.
All right, so we have Judy Pizzo from the Department of Transportation, who's the project manager on this particular study, and she's going to take you through the project activities.
Thank you, Lois. Can you hear me okay? All right. There's some folks here today that have heard this before, so I'll try to keep it as fresh as I can. For the record, I am Judy Pizzo with the Florida Department of Transportation. I am the project manager for the Intermodal Transit Station Study. I'll refer to it as ITS. The summary in your packet is a very good summary of this project. The extent of the study, well, there is a map in the PowerPoint that I'll show you in a moment, is from State Road 400 to US 92. That's from the south to the north. And from Tomoka Farms Road to Clyde Morris from your west to your east. Your stakeholders in this corridor are listed on the slide here, but it goes beyond those that are listed. It's those individuals that also live, work, play, commute to, drive through, visit. Unfortunately, we can't interview all of those, so we have public participation meetings. We've had one of those meetings at the start of the project, which is early June, and we will have a second and final public participation meeting in November, on November 14th, and I encourage you all to attend. That will be at the Daytona State College. The stakeholders that are listed, we have had one-on-one interviews to determine through this process what they felt would be best define an intermodal station ITS parcel location. In addition to these stakeholders, we are also interviewing the elected officials. What is the purpose of an intermodal station? When you look at all different forms of transportation, whether it be pedestrian, car, bicycle, train, plane, you are posed in this corridor to help facilitate, to support such a station. You have a lot going on in this corridor, as I've learned from interviewing your stakeholders. You've got in the colleges, Embry-Riddle's expansion, Bethune-Cookman's expansion, the improvements going on at your racetrack, the International Speedway, as well as development across the street from there. So there is a lot going on in this corridor that such a station could help and be supported by, as well as the station itself being an economic opportunity. The study area, as I'd mentioned, this is the aerial picture of it. I'm sure you're familiar with your area. I've discussed what is the station, what it would do for you. As one of your council members had mentioned earlier, it'd be nice to get a lot of the traffic off the roads. Well, this would help to facilitate those actions. We also might consider, and I have been asked this in some of our meetings, with the AA study that is proposed, is this connecting the dot as to where a SunRail station or some sort of mass transit might also be a complement to? We don't know yet, but it's something to consider, to keep in mind. Some of your potential intermodal station facilities and services, what they do support, car rental, Obviously, some sites, you're limited in size from a minimum of 5 acres up to 10 acres. So if you had a car rental, you might want the cars themselves off-site from there. You're looking at taxi stands, park and rides, kiss and rides, bus bays. Also, you consider is places where folks could rent or leave a bicycle, although bicycles are sometimes included on buses or trains. So this gives you just a snapshot of that. Typical station amenities, what it might look like. This, of course, would be your vision. What would you want to see at such a station? These are different modes that, again, are supported. I've already gone over. And then examples of stations that are around the nation. So, again, you are at a very interesting juncture in your history here to help to support something of this nature. This is our project schedule. As I stated, we started in June with an inventory report. We had our data analysis and existing conditions report in August. We're now preparing our candidates. We have approximately 12 parcels that we've been looking at, which at this point I'm not ready to divulge. We are still honing that selection process. We are looking at things as simple as, well, I don't consider it that simple, is environmental constraints, as well as connectivity to other modes of transportation. Runs the whole gauntlet. We're also looking at our final report in November, but prior to that, as I mentioned, we do have a public outreach on November 14th. On cflroads.com, which is the department's website, you will find this project. You will find all support documentation to date, as well as the future information that is just being developed for our future meeting here. So that is the cflroads.com, and then you would select Volusia County or Daytona Beach, and then from there you would go to planning and look for the ITS study. And that's just another slide showing you a little bit of what it would look like once you get up online. So that is a very brief overview. If you have some questions, like some more additional information, I will take those questions now. Also here with me today is my consultant project manager, Ms. Martha Moore with Gabby and Associates.
Hi, John.
Yes, for the three of us over here, we'd like you to explain what a kiss and ride is. We're not familiar with that in the west side of the county.
Well, I'm glad you're not asking for a demonstration. Just that would be, for instance, you're commuting to work in Orlando and the wife wants the car for the day and there's only one car. She's going to drop you off, kiss you goodbye, and go spend some money.
Kiss you goodbye.
Any other questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
The next is a presentation on the DOT landscaping grants. Claudia?
Good morning. Claudia Calzaretta, FDOT. This is a program that's not new. It's been in existence for a while. It was updated recently, and I made a presentation to the CAC board and TTC board. The application is in the packet, as well as what outlines the criteria to apply for this program. Some noted highlights on this. This program is an application for landscaping on state roads only. It's first come, first serve. It pays for installation and plant materials only, not design or maintenance of. So the opportunity is out there. It's not through the liaison or through the priority list criteria. We have a separate office, the DOT, and the program office. That's where this goes through, and the information and contact information is on the back through Steve Smith. Again, these are standalone projects on state roads. Those are just the noted highlights. Are there any questions?
John?
Yeah, I have one. I was asked to bring this up. Years ago, and I'm probably talking 25 years ago, Holland Boulevard through Deltona was called State Road 444. It got a name, Holland Boulevard, and it's lost that State Road 444 designation. I'm trying to find out exactly what constitutes a state road as far as funding goes. When can roads be added to the state system and withdrawn from the county system? Because the funding going so bad, what is the criteria? What does the state require to have a county road, less travel road, to increase in travel and trips, moved up to become a state road? Is that a possibility, or is it who builds it, or what's the criteria for going up or down with that qualification?
If I may, Madam Chair. Good morning. Frank O'Day with the Florida Department of Transportation. I'm the Director of Transportation Development. What you're talking about is what we call a jurisdictional transfer that you're looking at potentially. And it's a process that we do on a fairly regular basis where we look at what the roads are actually used for. And there's some general categories where if it's a facility that's connecting CIS facilities, it might lend itself to be a state road. So what we do is there's a process, we evaluate it, and then we work with the local governments on potentially taking over different roads. So if you have a suggestion, you can email Claudia, and what we do is we evaluate the road and take a look. And we're in the middle of doing that all the time with different jurisdictions.
Okay, it's an ongoing process. It's just a request to study it or whatever. I mean, do we need any detailed, simple request?
Well, if you just make the request through Claudia, and then we would take it from there, and we'd contact you
and take a look at it. We're looking at the growth potential in a few years up in that corridor, and it's being used for it's being used as a go-between from the west side over toward the east, and Holland is really increasing the traffic counts, and it's beyond the scope of the county to be able to finish everything and do the upgrading.
There's a number of roads that fit that category, and then also, you know, the department also has a number of roads that we don't think necessarily fit the state road system. And so when we look at it, we oftentimes look to swap roads. And depending on the location, we might work that out with the local jurisdiction where we'll take over one facility. In turn, they would take another one back. So just if you contact Claudia, that will start the ball rolling, and that applies to all local jurisdictions.
Okay, very good. Any further questions? All right, thank you. All right, and finally, Executive Director report.
I think Claudia still had her FDOT
report. I'm sorry,
Claudia. Beyond landscaping. That was just a reminder that there are other funding sources that are available, landscaping, lighting, and sometimes our smaller partners aren't aware of those.
Okay, now then we have Claudia for the report.
Good morning, Claudia again with FDOT. I have three projects that came on the construction radar. The first one is a resurfacing project on northbound US 1 and intersection of Wilmette Avenue, Norman Beach. The second project is on State Road 44 from Eddy Road to 3rd Avenue, New Smyrna Beach. This project rebuilds signals along 44 corridor with MassDOT signals. The third project is a resurfacing project in Flagler Beach on State Road 100 from east of 995 to A1A. Any questions?
All right,
thank you.
Okay. Then we go on to the executive director.
Well, just a couple of quick items. One regarding reapportionment. It seems like for a while we were really focused on all of the reapportionment activities, and now we're kind of in a holding pattern. But I believe the City of Palm Coast has scheduled this as a discussion item at a workshop on November 12th. And so it looks like we may be moving forward and getting some response. I had hoped that they would have a rep here today to talk about that. I don't really have any of the details beyond knowing that they're getting ready to discuss this and their resolution of support for the reapportionment plan. I wanted to add one other item, and that was yesterday there was a trail ceremony that was held in the city of Titusville, but what's important to us is it was a ceremony recognizing the coast-to-coast trail that runs, of course, through the East Central Florida Rail Trail here in Volusia and across the state that would connect the Atlantic coastal shoreline to the Gulf Coast. And it's a 275-mile project, and there's an effort to close the gaps. And the Governor Scott and Secretary of Transportation were at that particular event yesterday and had some very, very promising and encouraging words to share. And so we're all sort of hoping and optimistic that there will be funding allocated in the next session towards closing the gaps on that project, which is very good news for Volusia County. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. All right, and finally, board member comments. Is there anyone that would like to make a comment? Oh, public comment, all right. Okay, with no board comments, we have one public comment.
Elizabeth.
I believe it's Lendian, if you'd come up.
Elizabeth Alicia Lendian, CAC. I would just like to mention to y'all that community of De Leon Springs is having a festival this Saturday. It's called Autumn in the Oaks. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, goes till 4 o'clock. It's free. All kinds of activities and events, art, music, and crafts. We would love to have y'all participate or come to our festival. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And there is a Ponce de Leon look-alike contest for a prize of $500.
All right, who do we have can apply here?
John.
John, yes. Okay, Gene Emter has a comment.
I just have one quick comment, and I'd like to congratulate Herb and staff on having a very clean audit. We all know how difficult that can be at times, and I was real pleased to read that report. Congratulations.
Very good.
Okay, Pat?
Just a quick comment. It's not transportation, but it's agriculture related. The Commissioner of Agriculture, Adam Putnam, will be in the land at the fairgrounds for breakfast on November 8th. So if you're interested, you have to have a ticket. It doesn't cost anything to go. But contact me or contact the Farm Bureau office, Bill Hester, if you're interested in going to it. They've got 300 tickets and expecting a pretty good show up for the commissioner.
Okay, Deb?
Yes, I'd just like to introduce John Michaelis, if you could stand. He is shadowing me today. He is a member of our Volusia Citizens Academy. And we thank you for volunteering and serving in the academy, and we will be discussing some other issues as he has questions and joining us for lunch at the Port Orange South Daytona Chamber Leadership Luncheon with Mayor Ritchie later today.
Okay, you, very John. Good. Any further comments? All right.
John Rogers,
you had your first name covered, yeah.
Hey, I would also like to have our new city manager stand up, Larry Williams, and introduce him to the group. He comes to Bunnell by the way of Eatonville for 5 years and Belle Isle as the city manager also for about 7 or 8 years, and I just want to welcome him.
Okay, thank you. All right, and I just want to add that the executive board will be evaluating Lois, so if any of you have any comment or feedback that you would like to talk to one of the members, which would be me, Pat, Rob, who else is? I think Ed Kelly
Marshall.
And Marshall. So, and Pat Northey, who's not here. So, so if you do want to give any feedback, and we appreciate any comments as we do that. And finally, real quick, Lillian Place ghost tours Friday and Saturday. And if you want to meet the ghosts, come on out. It starts at 6. All right. Do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
All right. Meeting's adjourned.